Chapter 9. Early on Saturday morning, 150 pounds of pot arrived from California. Chris met the car down in Perth Amboy at a broken-down hole of a house that he'd bought because it had a garage underneath it. He helped the driver take the screws from the false bed of the El Camino that they used for transport. The dope was wrapped in plastic garbage bags, which he loaded into the hole in the floor that he dug and lined with concrete. When they finished the unloading, the driver left to go back to Rahway and get some sleep. He was in a hurry, intended to leave for San Diego that night. By noon, most of the pot was distributed. The dealers came in pickup trucks that appeared to belong to contractors that the house was obviously in need of. Five trucks drove away with 25 pounds each. Two were going to the shore. One was going to East Orange. Two more were headed for Plainfield. Chris closed up the hole with the last 25 pounds in it and drove to a phone booth called San Diego. Is Steve there? Not right now. Well, is Peter home? Hold on. That was Peter's code. He was Steve and he was Peter. But until you asked for both of them, he was never there. Chris waited for Peter to get on the phone, but it was Carol's voice that said, "Is that you, Chris?" "Yeah. Everything's fine here." "I'll tell him. When are we going to see you?" "I should be out in no more than a week." "We'll look forward to seeing you." "Right." While Chris drove back to Rahway, he calculated his split. If everything went as planned, which it almost never did, he would clear about $3,000 after expenses and private stock. Not bad, he told himself. The unloading had gone smoothly, but collecting the money and getting together with everybody was more time-consuming. This time, the expenses of the deal included a week in San Diego. Chris snapped his fingers and smiled at the thought of partying for a week with Peter. They had been friends since they were little kids. Peter had showed Chris how to roll up a comic book inside of a newspaper and walk out of the store with them. He had showed Chris that the best place to write cheat sheets for school was on the bottoms of your shoes. He had taught him how to siphon gasoline out of somebody else's tank. Peter was a great outlaw, just crazy enough to be scary and smart enough to know what he could get away with. And damn, he did know how to party. The last time Chris had been out there, they'd gone to the ball game and gone for a cruise, gone backstage at a Jackson Brown concert and snorted cocaine with some of the people there. They'd ridden horses out on Peter's ranch and eaten like kings. And of course there would be some California honey that Peter wanted Chris to meet, and she would be tan and beautiful and fuck like a bunny. The California trip was always something Chris anticipated with glee. By the time Ron got up on Saturday morning, everyone was out of the house except for Laureen, who was still sleeping. Ron decided that it was time he let his family know that he was back from Minnesota. He debated whether he should call first, but decided to just drive up. The 35-minute ride sped past the same way the drive to New York had. Ron wondered if it was a permanent benefit left over from driving over 24 hours without stopping, but decided it was most likely temporary. He still had his key, but decided to ring the doorbell. He immediately heard Chipper barking and grinned. Someone walked to the door very fast, and Ron recognized his stepfather silhouetted through the curtain. George Bombasco smiled as he opened the door. "When did you get back?" "Just a little while ago," said Ron. "Marjorie, look who's here," hollered George. "I haven't even washed my face yet," he heard his mother say. "Who is it?" "Come and see," said George. She opened the door. Chipper came running into the hall. Marjorie was stunned. "Ronald!"
"Hi, Mom."
"You're home," she said, smiling broadly. "I spoke with Robin yesterday, and she said that you were out somewhere and that she didn't know when you'd be back."
"I don't know why she'd say that," lied Ron.
Chipper whimpered and jumped up on Ron. Ron bent down, let the dog lick his face, which she continued to do for at least 2 minutes, while Marjorie stood there beaming and said, "You'd think that royalty had arrived." Then Chipper began to pee in the hall, and Marjorie bellowed, "George, the dog peed all over the rug again." "Jesus Christ," he heard his stepfather say from inside the apartment as he galloped over to the broom closet to get a roll of paper towels and disinfectant. "Is Aunt Dottie upstairs?" said Ron. "Why don't you go and say hello to her while I wash my face, and then we can talk. Have you had breakfast?" "Yes," Ron lied. Marjorie stepped back.
"You've lost an awful lot of weight, haven't you?"
"Only a little."
"You're too thin," she said, staring at him. "I'm going to go see Aunt Dottie, but I'd love a cup of coffee."
"Okay," said his mother, and walked back into the apartment as George came out with the towels and disinfectant. George screamed at Chipper, "Why do you do that?" Dog put her tail between her legs and hit in back of Ron. Chipper followed Ron up the stairs, all the time watching George down on his hands and knees, rubbing the carpet and cursing. His great aunt occupied the second floor of the two-family home. She lived alone in a four-room apartment since her third husband had died. Ron rapped on the door. "Come in," said Aunt Dottie. "When I heard all the ruckus downstairs, I knew that it was you." They hugged and kissed. Chipper began to whimper again. Dottie turned to him and said, "Don't you pee up here. Go back in the hall if you need to pee. Maybe they'll start letting you out in the morning, like I told them to." The dog stared at the wrinkled finger the old woman was pointing at her and licked Aunt Dottie's hand. "That's a good girl," said Dottie. "How are you feeling, Aunt Dot?"
"The same. Good days, bad days." She lit a cigarette. "I'm still able to puff, though."
"Good for you," said Ron. "I go to the doctor's every 3 weeks, and I've been telling him that I quit smoking for the last 6 months. He keeps on saying how much I've improved since I stopped." They laughed, and Ron looked down at her kitchen table.
"You look good," he said.
"I know what I look like," said Dottie. "What happened with Robin? Did she dump you?" Ron was silent. His mind went to pain. He didn't want his eyes to fill. He stayed quiet, waited, trying to hold on till it passed. "Well, you're younger, and there are a lot of girls out there for her."
"I wanted her."
"Well, if she doesn't want you, there isn't much you can do about it except forget about her."
"I don't think I can."
"Well, don't let her know that, or you'll never get her back."
"Did she stay out there?"
"Yes, but she's coming back for a visit on Wednesday."
"You make yourself scarce so that she doesn't think you're waiting around for her."
"That's a good idea, Aunt Dot. Tell me about you."
"At my age and in my condition, there isn't a lot to tell. I used to have the damn breathing machine all the time, and they've got me taking about 16 pills a day. It's no fun getting old, but nuts to them. I still do what I want, whenever I feel like it." Ron grinned again. Are you back for good?
I think so.
Do you need money?
No, I'm fine.
I haven't got much, but what I have is yours. Don't be ashamed to ask.
I won't be.
Now you better go back downstairs before your mother has a cow. She's missed you terribly.
Okay, I'll call you soon.
Forget to call me. Show your face.
Okay, Aunt Dot.
When he stood up, she said, Did you get so thin worrying about that girl?
I suppose.
That's not worth it, you know.
You're probably right.
Don't be saying things that you think I want to hear. What I'm telling you is for your own good.
Really? I know.
All right now. Go and see your mother. Ron went back downstairs and found that his mother had set out 3 cups and a plate of breakfast buns.
How do you think your aunt looks?
Not bad.
She's been very sick. Did she tell you?
Told me that the doctor thinks she stopped smoking. She thinks that she's fooling everybody, your aunt, but it's not doing her any good.
How are things with you?
All right. Tell me about Minnesota. It's a great place to live, Ma, but it's just not home.
I knew you'd be back.
What made you decide to leave?
I just wanted to come home.
Where are you going to stay?
I'm going to stay in Rahway for a while.
Have you seen them yet?
Yes.
When did you get back?
A few days ago.
A few days ago?
Why didn't you call?
George came into the kitchen, poured his coffee. He picked up an apple turnover, bit into it.
Ron's been home a few days, George.
George grunted.
Did you go and see your father yet?
What for?
Because he's your father.
I'll get around to it.
I'm sure you've seen all of your so-called friends.
I haven't really seen anyone, Mom.
The truth is, I'm a little confused about things right now.
George finished his turnover and gulped down the last of his coffee.
I'm going to get the cold cuts. You want anything special?
Your what? Said Marjorie.
My son just showed up at the door, unexpectedly, after I wasn't sure that I'm ever going to see him again, and you want to know if I want anything special from the delicatessen?
I just asked, said George indignantly.
No, George, she said in a voice edged with sarcasm, there's nothing special that I want from the delicatessen.
Is that all?
Jesus.
I mean, don't you want to know how he is?
He said he felt okay.
Fine. You go to the deli and the milk store and run to your mother's house to say hello, run out again. That's what you intend to do, isn't it?
You're upset with him.
I don't see why you have to take it out on me.
I'm not taking anything out on you.
Maybe Aunt Dottie wants something from the stores.
I'll go ask before I go.
Are you still going to be here when I get back? He said to Ron.
I don't know, said Ron.
That's a wonderful greeting. Are you still going to be here when I get back?
I'm surprised he doesn't leave now.
That's not what I meant, and he knows it.
Take care of yourself, Ron. I'm glad that you're back.
Thanks, said Ron.
That wasn't so hard, was it? Said Marjorie.
Sometimes you're just too much, said George as he left.
You want to know how things have been around here. They'll never change. That is how they are.
I know. I came to see you and Aunt Dottie.
They talked for an hour about Minnesota and Robin and what Ron was going to do now.
I'll probably do the second half of the graduate assistantship in the fall, said Ron.
I sent you the papers. Did you mail them in?
Yeah, I figured just in case, you know. He remembered getting the papers.
on his graduate work while he was out in Minnesota. He filled them out, told himself that he was just keeping his options open, but he wondered if that was what he was really doing, if that was when he really decided to come back home. Before he left, Marjorie said, "You know, you always have a home here. I know that. Do you have to pay rent down in Rahway?" "Not at the moment. I'm sure they won't let you stay there for nothing. Nobody has said anything to me about money just yet. How's Chris?" "He's good. Tell him I said hello. I like Chris." When they kissed, she began to cry. "I missed you very much. It's not like it was between us when you were little." "Can't be. I don't know what I've done to make you want to stay away like this." "You haven't done anything. I've tried not to interfere, even when I saw you being hurt. I know that." As Ron was leaving, he called goodbye up to his aunt, who was sitting at the top of the stairs holding Chipper. "Be careful," she said. "Pay attention to what I told you." "I will, Aunt Dot," he said, and closed the door. He was glad he'd gotten this over with. Marjorie came out into the hall and exchanged a worried look with Aunt Dottie. "He's made himself awfully sick over this girl," said Marjorie. "He just needs time to get her over her. He's never acted like this before over anyone," said Marjorie. "He was head over heels, and he's a young man. Right now, he's not sure of anything. Just give him time. Don't pressure him about anything. I'm not going to stand by while my son ruins his health." "Margie," I said, "give it time." Dottie began to cough after she shouted, got up from the stairs, went back up into her apartment. Marjorie listened to the sound of the breathing machine as she started it up.